Namaste, good morning everyone. On Christmas Day, I gave a brief talk on a message by the American mystic Joel Goldsmith, where he said, "The Antichrist is the belief in two powers, good and evil." And this is basically pure Advaita, because Christ consciousness, when it gets caught in the realm of duality of every conceivable kind, then it takes on a dualistic nature. So when we get caught between the polarities of good and evil, we have split, so to speak, that one source consciousness into a power for us and against us. And then we live a life like that, without realizing that consciousness is all there is. So either there is a person for us and a person against us, or there's an event for us, an event against us. And in this quest to survive, which becomes more like a battle, the battle of the me, this connection with the source consciousness is broken. And when we are able to surrender to the one source consciousness, staying connected to the source by realizing the hand of God is above all and behind all events, then we start facing life and not running away from aspects of it. That is why he refers to the Gospel of Saint John, which focuses a bit more on the teachings of Jesus and constantly reiterates the original sin, Adam and Eve eating of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Till then in paradise, and then the fall from the Garden of Eden. Quite beautifully sums up the highest teachings of Advaita. You see, as long as we are for something and against something, life will constantly supply us people and situations to be for and against. But when we rise above the polarities, so to speak, then this dualistic nature of the world does not disturb us like it used to. So we come back to the peace that surpasses understanding. Those who are familiar with these talks, I keep talking about peace of mind, as you know. But that is a way of communication. Because what this teaching is actually doing is pushing you back into the silence. With your cooperation, silencing the thinking mind, which is standing on the pedestal of doership and always lost in the dead past or an imaginary future. So, by and by, when these concepts are explained, And they bring peace of mind. In situations when they are reviewed, reassessed, reinterpreted, and one finds one is more and more at peace than one was earlier, what is actually happening is not the peace of mind itself. What is actually happening is one is being pushed back to pure being, witness consciousness, Sakshi Bhav, which represents the unmanifest. So one is no longer enthralled by the dualistic nature of life as one was. Goldsmith referred to it as being dehypnotized. You see, because silence is a quality of the self, not the silence which is the opposite of noise. That is again the polarity. But that silence from which all sounds emerge and into which all sounds subside. So the silent mind appears as a silent mind, but what is actually happening is a deep resting in the self. As Ramana Maharshi says, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. This usually happens when one has become aware of the transient nature of things, life, people, and one is searching for a deeper meaning. That deeper meaning is nothing but the rediscovery of pure being. It is as simple as that. It is not some spectacular event or revelation or bolt of lightning coming from somewhere. It is just that this screen of consciousness on which my life is playing out has been acknowledged, rediscovered. And because now I am an aspect, which I always was, but a recognition of it has happened, I do not get too perturbed by the movement on the screen of consciousness. I suffer the pains, enjoy the pleasures, but no longer derive my identity from them. Rameshji put across the concept of the original sin in another way. He said, according to him, the original sin in Advaita is when one object in manifestation, let's say me, takes another object in manifestation, which is you, but this object usurps the subjectivity of God and starts passing judgment on you. You should be this way, you should behave this way, you should not have done that, you should have done that, as if I know better than you. So I lose sight of the fact that just like you, I too am an instrument of God with my own sets of conditionings, genetics, innate nature, and I see the world and have a worldview based on this programming, and you have your worldview based on your programming. Because we are both instruments of the one source consciousness. But the ego thinks I know better. You see? And starts acting like the judge and jury and loves passing verdicts and sentencing people to various crimes. So the dualistic nature of me and the other becomes me versus the other. That's the battle of life. So, in both cases, good and evil, me and the other, it is referring to the dualistic nature of life and living. We can't get out of it. We are born into it till our last breath, but we can transcend it. And in that transcendence, in that resurrection, no longer polarized, comes Sukha Shanti. Deep peace, the eternal present moment. If we start counting the number of people we have judged in our lives since we were small, we'd be quite surprised. It's as if we have crucified them in our own minds. An aspect of the oneself taken to be apart from it has been crucified by us. And of course, many of us love to crucify ourselves too. We are obsessed with it, being not good enough, having too many flaws, and so on and so forth. All right. If anyone would like to share anything or ask something, they are welcome to now. Yes, Kamla.
Namaste, Gautam ji. Namaste to everyone. The first thing I must say, Gautam ji, is I am very, very grateful for this Zoom meeting you have created for all of us. I have been in your meeting now for a few times. I am living in Spain. I am origin, my origin is from India, from Rajasthan. Sorry, because my English is not 100%. If I don't know in any word, I will speak in Hindi, okay?
Yeah, sure.
And it's difficult for me to attend sometimes your meetings, but today I don't know why. I have wake up according the timetable here in Spain, and because we are in emergency alert for the weather from yesterday, and I have wake up quickly today. I couldn't sleep. I was waiting for your meeting today. I am very, very grateful, Gautam ji.
Thank you. Is there something you'd like to ask, or is it just that?
Is that and only I can say I was going to ask you something, but I think the topic about you have talked today, for some reason, I don't know why, you have answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's how it works. Isn't it amazing? The
Yeah.
source is so, it's so sensitive to our
Yeah.
need. We don't have to ask something in order for it to get answered.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kamla. And
Thank
I
you.
hope you're going to be okay with the weather there.
Thank you. Thank you, Gautam.
Yes, sir. Is that Mutharasu? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes. You're able to hear me, right?
That's right.
Yeah, you're able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good morning, Gautam.
Morning.
This is just now what you spoke. I also had a similar experience what that lady just now spoke. What I was trying to ask, what you just now spoke, partially it answered that. And the rest part of it, actually, that is when you said between the good and evil, no? Actually, personally to me, I don't face much problem in aligning towards means between identifying what is good and bad. But there are some doubts, within the good itself, there are various things which is happening actually. There, I get sometime confused. Just for example, like in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, when we is seems to be inclined more towards bhakti than towards jnana, in my understanding. And similarly, one of the great saint of India, when he was categorizing the different methods for God realization, he was talking about japa, meditation, bhava, mahabhava, like that. There are at least the literature or the things which I am reading seems to be giving, of course, two prominence to jnana yoga, but in addition to that, a lot of importance to bhakti, that is bhava and mahabhava or prema. Actually, you have something to comment on that, please.
Yes. Firstly, what is it that you are drawn to the most yourself? Is it bhakti or is it gyan?
So that is a very strange thing. The last time I had come to your house also once, I asked the same question to you. You asked me the same question back. I am saying again, I am doing both. The mind inclination is no, I do formless meditation, I feel very happy. I do japa meditation, I am initiated also by a guru. I do that also daily. I do both. I feel happy, inclined for both the things
So
actually. That
that's
is.
beautiful. So where's the complaint? Where's the complaint then?
No complaint actually, but means is there any degree which is this is good, that is better or like that, I'm asking.
Okay, so see, firstly in the Gita, different chapters focus on different aspects, whether it is Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Gyan. But in a nutshell, if through Gyan, you understand and see God in everyone. Wouldn't you call that the ultimate bhakti?
Yes,
So,
yes.
are bhakti and Gyan different?
No.
You see, if I say I am into bhakti and it's all about loving the deity and loving God, and I'm happy with that, but I have relationships which are miserable and inharmonious, is that true bhakti?
No.
So, when I see the hand of God above everyone in my life, whether they have pushed my buttons or they love me is irrelevant. When I see that one hand of God, then my relationship is no longer with individuals, it is with God. That is to me the ultimate bhakti being lived. So, when Gyan brings me to this place, where I see manifestations of the one self all the time, I'm less disturbed, my peace of mind is intact, and I'm living the epitome of bhakti and gyan. That is it. It's so beautiful. And you see, as long as you enjoy your spiritual journey and you seem to be, you're very content, very happy, whether it is japa, whether it is gyan yoga, whether it is bhakti, it is really not relevant. What is relevant is, am I more at peace than I was earlier? That is the only measure, the only yardstick. It is so tangible. It is so lived as an experience, sukha shanti. And if I find that I am at peace, please enjoy your spiritual journey. Don't doubt it, don't question it too much. And don't listen to too many people because they will all come with their expert advice. That is why my guru would say, give advice only and only if you are asked for it. Because everyone is too busy doling out free advice when they are not even being asked. So I would say, if you are content, you're happy deep within, it's so beautiful, isn't it?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Sai Ganesh.
Namaskar,
Namaste.
Guruji.
Good, thank you.
How are you doing? Guruji, I have two questions. The first question is, when I deal with the day-to-day things, if I have teaching in my mind, I will respond, but when the teaching is not in my mind, sometimes I forgot, or maybe I will be completely, ingrained, and the thing that is happening, I will lose the teaching in a way, and I will react. So my question is how to have the teaching or the gnan every time, in the sense, every time that we deal with the things. That's my first question. And the second question is, I need advice. I'm asking advice from you. How to parent in Advaitic way. How to be a parent in Advaitic way. Parenting 101, Advaitic way. These are my two questions. Thank you.
See, the first question is, don't forget that we are living our lives through decades of conditioning. It takes time for the old conditioning to be erased or transformed. So sometimes we find we are going back to old patterns. At that time, we have to be gentle on ourselves because at least there's a recognition that, my God, I've reacted the old way. I got lost in the illusion, so to speak. So it's all right. We are human beings. This is a new way of seeing life, seeing situations. It's going to be a gradual process, just like when you learn driving. The minute you learn driving, you're given the license, but you are not comfortable and confident on the roads because you have learned driving recently. It is over time, with practice, you find that the journeys become more and more stress-free and smoother. And one day, in spite of heavy traffic and buses and trucks around you, you find you're still at peace. So one should not lose heart if one finds incidents where one is again triggered, gone back to past reactions. And one should not strive too hard to enforce the teaching, because that also is too much doership. And this whole teaching is about non-doership. So simply an awareness and recognition that, oh, here too an old pattern got triggered is enough. The difference is when I see this, I might find that I say and express myself in a different way compared to earlier. For example, if someone triggers me and I get angry, I normally would hold on to that anger and not speak to that person for the full day. Let's say, just as an example. Now I see I got triggered, I got angry, but since my view has now changed in retrospect, I have seen and contemplated on the scene, it may make me apologize to that person and say, hey, I'm sorry if I hurt you, I didn't mean it. Whereas earlier, I may not have apologized. So one has to just allow this teaching to do its job. It will come when it's meant to come. Earnestness is the key, and sincerity, as Nisargadatta Maharaj would say. And by, you will know for yourself whether you are resting in peace more and more compared to earlier or not. It is as simple as that. Now, regarding your second question, it is very simple to answer because when my teacher was asked this, he would say that parents, of course, are the first teachers of the child and they have the child's best interests at heart. The first gurus of the child are the parents. But what tends to happen is the parents try to force their view on the child. They need to realize, in his words, in Rameshji's words, that children come with their own destiny. And children are not the parents' children, they are the children of God. So when parents lose this obsession of indoctrinating children and bombarding them with conditioning and doership And rest easy and enjoy the process of parenting, and at the same time, allow the child to bloom as per the child's innate nature and gifts. Then this pressure is released from both parent and child. So nothing really has to be done by you in terms of an Advaitic way to bring children up, but just to recognize that we all are here with our own blueprint. And as long as we are aware and stay close to this truth, people will blossom the way they are meant to. If you put too much force, then there's distortion. Then the child can become a resentful adult. You see? So, this attitude of we know best what is good for you has to be relooked at. You may think you know best as a parent, you operate in the interest of the child, but you do know that there is a higher power above which is actually guiding the show. That is all that is required, nothing more than that. All right, I hope that helps. Are you there, Sai Ganesh? Okay. Yes, Tejaswini.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
How are you?
I don't know if my net is slow or is it yours, but I'm not able to hear you clearly.
Hi. Yeah, you did answer my.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Can we?
I'll come back to you, Tejaswini, because I'll just check if my connection is okay. It seems to be. Okay, let's move on to Padmini. Yes, Padmini.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
I actually met you 40 years ago.
Yes, I remember.
You
I remember.
do. Wow, amazing. In Kulaga, I think when you were there, or was there a satsang? Can't remember. Your mother was there,
That's
Santosh.
right.
And then, I imagine if I had stuck with you and this path and all these years, but life took over and marriage, divorce, kids, separation, all sorts of things, business, work, parents passed away, responsibilities, So it's been great fun at times, but terribly challenging. And now, recently, in the past 2, 3 years, work has been challenging, as well as life, family relationships and so on. And I started, I've always been very drawn to Advaita and my family. I mean, there was Vivekananda's works. We've got hundreds of books on all of this, and David Frawley and Yoga Ayurveda, and so many, many books. And we're in the book business anyway. But 2, 3 months back, your YouTube feed threw you up again, and I saw one of your talks, and also the whole Sai Baba connection. You speak so much about Sai Baba and your talks with Nikhil, that series, which I even this morning listened to, and I've been like one hungry greedy vulture, just feeding on all of this, your talks, and particularly Sai Baba as well. My cousin Malu, who also used to come to your mom's satsangs, she is an avid devotee. And then I went to the temple in B Road, sweet little temple on
Yes.
Wednesday, Sai Baba temple. And I'm not a temple person, but suddenly this has now, I feel, because mummy always had Guru Nanak picture, they never did Satnarayan Kathas or any kind of rituals or worships, or neither told us we have to go to this temple or that temple. My dad used to go to Pondicherry. You've been talking about Pondicherry. He took me to Aurobindo to the ashram, and I actually put my head in mother's lap. That time she used to give darshan like that, give blessings like that. And I had all of that, you know, I've had the grace of that, which may have tided me over up to now. Otherwise, I don't know where I would have gone, because I think my ego is terribly, terribly huge, and I need to squash that. That I know is my biggest sort of obstacle and so on, but now one is trying. Anyway, life right now. So really coming to the question, this is my about me, and thanks to YouTube, I'm here today and listening to your talks and Sai Baba. So this is happening. But this morning I was listening to your October Zoom meeting. You know, this is December now. It was just audio, it's on YouTube. I was listening to it. One of the questions was about, it's easy to forgive people, but not ourselves. And this, I think, is the greatest torment that I go through all the time, because one is goofing up all the time, you know. And you talk to somebody badly, or with my daughter, oh God, there's solid stuff going on with her. So what you say is that we crucify ourselves and ridden with guilt and all of that. I mean, I'm ridden with guilt all the time. So the question is, and I'm sure it's come up 100 times in all your talks and in all your satsangs, and 100 people would have asked it, but your non-doership, it's not us that does it. So does that absolve you totally of responsibility? I know you've given these answers again before, but please, if you would just, I don't know how to reconcile that I am not responsible. I mean, so one can get away with murder. Of course, I know that this is a process, and over time, I will never do that thing again with these teachings and with this practice, the way I speak to say the soft targets. That was something you used in one of your talks on the terrace. I was walking, I listened to you in the morning for the morning walk. I'm listening to your conversations, and I love the ones with Nikhil. And he's such a lovely person also. It comes through, you know, with you and your... Anyway, so I can't reconcile that I'm not responsible, or that it was okay and it had to happen, because I am now suffering the consequence of that. Right. So what is it that will then allow you to live through these days and moments? Is it meditation? I've asked 100 questions in this one question, I know. But so
no,
sorry.
But it shows, it also shows your sincerity for the answer.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay, I'm done. You've understood what I'm trying to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's so hard for the ego to give itself the opportunity to not blame itself, because it is so encrusted with doership and as if it has been control of its life. You see, that is the difficulty. I can forgive others, but I can't forgive myself. That actually exposes this doership. Now, does it mean that I continue being nasty to certain people in my life? All I can do is try not to be nasty. I have had a set of conditionings the way my parents treated me, and it's made me who I am today. So if I feel I'm dominant, judgmental, I condemn people easily, at least now I'm aware that I'm like that. Most people are living lives of unawareness, where they are hurting people and they are not aware that they are hurting people, because they are so self-obsessed with not being hurt themselves. So on the spiritual journey, the first step is, at least I am aware. Now what do I do? All I can do is try. Absolving of responsibility, of course, because I have seen, I didn't choose my conditioning when I was young. I didn't choose my nature. Was I timid? Was I shy? Was I aggressive? Was I outgoing? I was just simply made like that. I didn't choose my religion. I didn't choose the income group. I didn't choose the geographical location, in which this baby started receiving conditioning Life happened, challenges happened, and it made me who I am. Even if it means I'm a mean person. But when I see it, that is the first break and disassociation from this ego sense of self. The awareness that this is who I am, what I've become. But that awareness is shining the light. Now, actually, it is a big relief to feel that there was a higher power which did all this. I must allow myself, because you see, I am not absolving myself of the consequences. All actions have consequences. I have to live with them. But this weight which was on my shoulders, why am I a mean person? Why am I a nasty person? Why do I constantly berate some people in life? First, I release it. I give this burden to the source. Now, with this new way of being, new understanding, I navigate myself through life with the same people, same situations. And it is this teaching which starts operating through me. That is what happens. So rather than being focused on berating myself, because see, the ego loves to shine the spotlight on itself. That shifts. That obsession with my ego now shifts. I'm no longer obsessed with myself. And so I will find by and by. It's see, Padmini, we are all a work in progress. Secondly, I speak a lot about Rinanubandhan. Some relationships in life are based on hardwired karmic give and take, as Sai Baba would say. He would go into generations of Rinanubandhan. So these are karmic bondages which we have to deal with. Otherwise, we will perpetuate into this bondage again and again and again. But through the concept of nobody doing, being the doer of their actions, thy will be done, slowly, slowly, by and by, this bondage is being released. That is what happens. So one has to
So,
be very careful of self-pity, because the ego loves that too, you see.
pity, poor me, and I've got, this happened, that happened, I had to go through this and that. So that poor me factor, as well as, oh God, I'm such a mean person, and I'm horrible, and all of that, and why did, and I'm but you're right, you are aware, one is aware that one does it. Perhaps in the past one would say, okay, I fired him, and he's such a horrible guy, so he deserved it, and I was right in firing him. I never thought that, oh God, I've done the wrong thing. But now, so these days, I mean, since the last 4, 5, 6 months or whatever, I do notice it, and I feel bad, and I go and try and make up and all, but I feel that's sort of like it's too little too late, kind of thing. It's kind of like a post issue. So anyway, I know this journey, and what you're saying is that slowly, slowly I'll change, or it'll come into me, and you're saying through the teaching I'll deal with those same people
You see,
differently.
it's not easy to erase the old conditioning. It's going to take time. And I, at the risk of repeating myself, will give the classic example, which is true. In my advertising days, I had a client, he was prone to a lot of anger. And I would find all the client servicing executives one by one refuse to handle him. Till I was the only one left to handle him. So what I did is I told the creative guys, you handle the clients. They couldn't say no, but they could also not handle him. So I didn't know what to do. We needed his business. I said, maybe now the time has come to let go of this client. Now I will not, you will not believe, Padmati, what happened. One day he called me up very distraught. And he said, Gautam, something terrible has happened, and I'd like to share it with you. That everyone is an aspect of the one self. Our nature would be not to hurt another. That is why Nisargadatta Maharaj, when he was asked, someone who would talk about Parabrahman and prior to consciousness, if you please, was asked in very simple words, in one sentence. A very simple man came to his satsang and said, tell me something very simple. And he said, all I would say is do not harm another. Forget Parabrahman. So all we can do is try and not be too hard on ourselves in that process. It takes time. It takes a lot of time.
Fingers and toes and everything crossed.
And
Thank
are you in Mumbai or are you outside Mumbai?
Very much here. And in fact, last Sunday, or when was it, that meditation day, I know you had a satsang, I think, at you're in Mystery Court now.
Yes, we have it twice a month, by and large, unless I'm traveling.
So
So
I'm
you're welcome to come.
I definitely want to. That day I couldn't, but or I had registered or thought of it, but I definitely, and it's so lucky that you're here. And I wanted to come to your retreat in February in the south, but somehow then the dates and that hotel where you're staying or where the whole thing is happening, they didn't have a single room, obviously must be
Yes.
booked out months ahead. So I'm still trying to figure out if I can make it to that and go stay in some other hotel
Yeah,
nearby.
Do try.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Took up a lot of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Meera.
Namaste, Gautam ji.
Namaste.
And actually, whatever has been talked today, it is like I have a comment slash question about it. As the last time when we spoke back in November, I had a question about the like you understand everything, like whatever the teaching has been, you imbibe it and you try to think that yes, the other person is not the doer. And you I've come to the level, I think to some extent, that instead of reacting, I respond. But then I don't have control over the other person's reaction. And then you have to keep that also in mind, that, and I am, whatever is the reaction, I am at peace. But I'd been trying to observe myself that why is it that although I am at peace, the other person may not feel that way. And I felt that maybe it is like it is another layer of conditioning, that my body language or my behavior is still like what is expected when I was earlier like that. But I am very much at peace inside. I understand that. So is it, I feel that, is it the ego that is coming from the back door and again saying that, no, you are feeling this way, but, or, so.
Look, Meera, you will know if you're at peace or if you're disturbed. So if you're at peace, forget about others and what they say. And why are you trying to deny yourself being at peace? So it is indeed the ego coming through the back door, because you will know, everyone knows when they are at peace and when they are disturbed. It's an innate knowing. Why? Because peace is our true nature. You see, the child, pure being, pure functioning, without any judgments, because the ego has not set in. That innocence of the child, that innocence is there because there is no hatred, malice, blame, condemnation, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame. And so to revert back to being childlike is a state of peace and joy. Children are joyful because they have not got limitations imposed on them, because the ego is not developed. So in our hearts, we know, are we at peace or not? Or are thoughts disturbing us? So very simple. So I would not bother too much about what others say. And certainly you cannot control what others say. They are free to their points of view. So even if they tell you, you don't seem to be at peace, so be it, thy will be done. That's your point of view. But deep within, I know. So let the others be to themselves. You know, there was a very beautiful couple who came for the first time in the last satsang. And the man said something which I've not heard before, which I found not just amusing, but actually a very deep truth. He said the only thing he prays for is others' peace so that they may not disturb him. He says, I want everyone to be peaceful so they don't disturb me. Because when everyone is at peace, of course, we are told that will happen in the Satyug. But when everyone is at peace and harmony, equanimity and calm, the world as we know it will come to an end. So, but the recognition to pray for others' peace is very beautiful because I know the value of that peace. And so the thought arises, let others be peaceful. What a beautiful thing to pray for. Because we are born into Mrityulok. This is the loka of death, which has immense challenges placed before us. And how do we navigate through this lifespan between birth and death is with the grace of the masters, face what we are meant to face with peace, equanimity, and calm, and not running away. As the Buddha said, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, but they are not two. You have to find your peace through your script, which has been written through the divine script. And look, this ego coming in through the back door. Arjuna also had the same problem. In the middle of the battlefield, he is telling his Lord, I refuse to fight because I cannot kill my preceptors. That is the ego coming in through the back door. Arjuna fell for it. And Krishna had to tell him, you are giving me a lesson in morality. When as time I have already killed them, and you are going to be only the instrument through whom the killing happens. Oh, Arjuna, pick up the bow and fight. So let's go easy on ourselves. This spiritual inquiry, this spiritual pursuit, you know, we have enough of troubles in life. We don't want this to also trouble us. Imagine that. Life is challenging enough, and we are now creating additional burdens for us because of this spiritual journey is really a grand deception. The ego simply loves it. You see, the ego likes noise of every conceivable kind because it is afraid to be silent, because silence means the death of the ego. So back door, side door, door up, down, down, it will keep coming. Till it is burnt in the fire of awareness. I can see where you're coming from. Ah, now you came from here. Now you come from here. Now you come from here. This awareness is what burns. This thinking mind, the ego with its sense of doership, and it takes time. Okay.
One more question, sorry,
Yes.
that this is like first time when we had a talk. I asked, and you mentioned something about you have to understand your relationship with yourself. Could you shed some more light on that, please?
We just spoke about it with
Yeah.
Padmini, but basically, you have to see that you yourself are a product of your past. Your genetics, your conditioning, your nature. So, when you understand that, you'll be less critical of others because when you start pointing out flaws in others, you will remind yourself, I have many of my own flaws, which God created. You see? So, this obsession with individuals goes. I am no longer judging individuals, including myself, like I used to earlier. Even if it comes up in the moment, the teaching also comes up, and the involvement in that judging drops away. So simple.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, Tejaswini, I hope the connection is better now.
I think I have sorted the connection. I'm audible now. Hi.
Yes, you are. You are.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I think I'm surviving this kind of ecological grief, to be very honest. I think with this understanding and with some form of, the teachings, I'm able to resolve all the conflicts in my life as such, the personal conflicts. But when it comes to this ecological grief, because I just saw a huge banyan tree being chopped and the news about Aravali, and now they're trapping the stray dogs. This is something which I'm struggling right now. I'm unable to process this. And it's a fortune that I just live 1 hour from Baba Shirdi. We met in Shirdi during your book launch. So I could visit and sit there in silence and just the same prayer. It's surprising to know that just peace to all, because I don't know where this is taking all of us, the humanity, and especially people and the dogs and the trees, which they don't have their own voice, but how we are, able to process this grief where I'm actually struggling. It is something which I'm just feeling so overwhelmed to speak about. So I'm not sure if I say that thy will be done, but what will be done? They don't have their own voice, and how humans will, when this will stop? That's my question. Thank you.
Tejaswini, this is the realm of duality. And the human species is the only one which has been given the gift of awareness. I am aware that I am aware. And this gift has been misused. But thankfully, there's the law of compensation in effect on planet Earth. As you sow, so you reap. It may not look like you get an immediate reap, but that is the law. That is why the appearance is as you sow, someone else reaps. That is the appearance. But what we give is what we get. And so I would leave it to nature to give back when it is meant to give back, and it knows best. Now, can this grief be avoided? Certainly not, because God has made you sensitive, and so you feel for those who cannot speak. Now, what happens after this grief? All you can do in your own small way is contribute in some way, whether it is your time, whether it is your effort, or your money. And that is why I give this example often. In my guru's time, the Kargil war happened. And on TV, we would see where bodies of the Indian soldiers were being brought back in coffins. And he said he was so touched and moved by what he saw. And grief in the moment arose. Next point, what can I do about it? So what he did was, he saw an ad in the paper, which was some relief fund, maybe the Prime Minister's relief fund. He said, I wrote out a check, I sent the check, and then I went back to my normal life. So in such situations, which are far beyond our control, and there are forces who obviously are ignorant about certain aspects of life, or whatever it may be, all we can do in our ways, what can I do about the situation? Because, if I start drowning in this well of grief because this is happening, then I'm not in any way available for any kind of service because I'm self-obsessed with my grief at what others are doing to animals and plants. So to wake up from this and realize that there are both aspects of personalities, those who are aware about the silent ones and those who are unaware. Both is the play of Shiva Shakti. This is the duality. Why are we having wars today? The same reason we had the Crusades centuries earlier. This is human nature. But what can I do about the situation I find myself in? And not only that, Tejaswini, you're young. So I'm sure you have other things to look at, other things to do during the day which give you hope, happiness, joy. So acknowledge that this is one aspect of life which pains me, troubles me. Of course, I'm sensitive. What can I do about it? I go about doing that. Leave the rest to God. Nobody is above this law that all actions have consequences. That is the law. So you need not worry on a larger scale of time and things about what's going to happen. Everything is alive. You buy a car, or you see a car on the road, looks like solidified consciousness, but it's just atoms and molecules vibrating inside. It just has the appearance of being inanimate. Nothing is inanimate in consciousness because the foundation of everything is consciousness. So how can there be unconsciousness within consciousness? It's absurd. All right?
Yeah, that's a, I think, a beautiful way to look at it. And I am contributing to certain NGOs. I did sign the petition for, just to look after our strays. I'm doing everything which I could, to be very honest.
Beautiful,
It's just
beautiful.
the thing that I could see destruction. It's not, again, I could say this is the planet, who is actually trying to, reconcile to whatever the human is putting in with this intention to develop everything. So what exactly they are trying to develop, I have no clue about. Yeah. Thank you so much, Gautam.
You
Have a
see, the problem is that the human ego, collective human ego, has become a monster, treading over, trampling over all species. So you need not worry, because justice will be done. We may be surprised in the ways it is done, but it will be done. Let's not think too much about it. I'm quite amazed that all of y'all have such beautiful backgrounds. I have such a boring white wall behind me, but someone has a purple, someone has a green, someone has a blue. It's so beautiful to see this diversity.
you.
All right. Thank you. You see, Sai Baba was the master of grand deception. And that story, which appears so simple, where he tells that woman who says she'll make a huge meal for him, and he says, I'll come at so and so time, and instead he does not show up. And then after some time, the dog shows up and starts barking at the door, and she shooes the dog away, and he says, I was the dog, and you didn't feed me. That level of awareness to see the one source consciousness through the ant, through the dog, through the tree, that is what he was pointing at, you see. So that when our relationship with all living beings reaches that stage of evolution, you could say, in a way, then the picture changes. That's what happens. Yes, Priyanka.
Hello, Gautam ji.
Hello.
Hello. I'm from London, and just to give a background, I'm listening. I'm first time joining you on a Zoom call, but listen to a lot of your videos online with Nikhil as well. Been a Sai Bhakt since childhood. Got on to teachings of Yogananda and a student of SRF as of today. I am a carer to a special needs child, and my question is, for me, surrender can become very difficult at times when I'm sitting in meditation because I'm not able to separate the mother out of me, and to sit. I do recognize the higher power, and I know the grace is working and is helping me get through every single day. But it kind of becomes very difficult for me to say, okay, this is my child and you take care of him. And because I hold all the failures and success of my child is like kind of dependent on whatever effort I put in. And that kind of becomes really, really difficult for me. to separate myself out and to say that Baba is with me, Baba is looking after him, and I'm just an instrument through which I have to push this soul in this lifetime to achieve whatever he has to achieve. I do understand all of that, but application and to live it daily is very, very difficult. So much so that in meditations, when they say that you have to be aware of your breath, I think I find it very, very difficult to be even aware of the breath, because I feel the moment the observation on the breath goes, I start controlling the breath. So I also do question myself, is there a huge, and I think there is, there's a huge element of ego, which somewhere I'm not able to let go and say that, okay, he is taking care of everything that's happening and I need to back off now. I'm not able to do that. And how do I approach this surrender? And I know Shraddha and Saburi are the, like the two main pillars. But in practice, it's really, really, really tough.
See, I don't blame you at all. In fact, parents of children of special needs have a very tough karmic journey to go through.
Yes.
Very tough. And so the parent of a special needs child has to work that much harder to try their best to guide the child who is not capable of guiding themselves in many cases in any way.
Yeah.
So the sense of doership gets ingrained and very strong. So to accept that this is how it happened, you know, again, at the risk of repeating myself, there's a book which I highly recommend to people called Your Soul's Plan. This book is the stories of about 10, maybe more, case studies where a therapist regresses his patient not to a past life, to a pre-birth stage, pre-birth stage. And roles are played, roles are decided. For example, the alcoholic decides that I will play the role of the alcoholic in the coming incarnation, and the caregivers will play their roles so that they all may learn what they are supposed to learn in the coming incarnation. And these kind of situations, like the parent of a child, there's a very heavy karmic give and take happening.
Yeah.
So it will help you see the relationship in objectivity, you know. Now, the thing is, Priyanka, as difficult as it may sound to absorb, the fact is that the child has come with their blueprint. And what is happening is this pressure you're putting on yourself to this degree is destroying your peace of mind.
Yeah.
When you start accepting that love, trust, and surrender, I gave the Dharamshala retreat was on this triangle of love, trust, and surrender to the higher power. Then this pressure, this self-imposed pressure, which is already being added on collective pressure of the parent of a child like this, is
yeah.
going to implode.
Yes.
So when you start resting in this knowing that this is the way destiny is going to play out in this incarnation for the child, but is there a way that at least some smidgen of peace can be brought to the equation as far as I am concerned? And to then explore that, to understand this journey, what is the karmic give and take here, what is the Rinanu Bandhan here, and to be easier on myself than I am. Because, you know, you use these words that to make sure I achieve what I achieve and the child achieves what they achieve. It is not about that. How do we know who is to achieve what?
Yeah.
You see? So I cannot really, nobody except the parent of a child like this knows what they are going through. So for us to give you advice is quite silly, actually. I have a cousin who has brought up a child who was not born like this, but a surgery went wrong when the child was 3, and it has led to a very unfortunate lifespan for this child who's now about 40. And the difficulty they go through, because even to fly him from London to Bombay, to Pune, to Delhi, it is such an immense challenge, something we ordinary people take for granted. So it is natural to put that pressure on yourself. But when you say Shraddha and Saburi, you're quite right, easier said than done. But look, the fact is, I'm not in charge of breathing. Breathing is happening. Blood is coursing through my veins without my control. This planet is rotating on its axis without my control. The planet is revolving around the sun, not in my control. Sunrise and sunset, not in my control. Then who is this ego which thinks it's in control of the child and itself and is trying to force an achievement and an outcome? Why
Is
not
fear,
let?
sorry,
Yes, it is
is
fear.
fear, yeah.
So who is this?
Yeah.
It's all right not to push oneself. It is all right. Allow yourself the small luxuries of life.
Yeah, I think because with the child with special need, the child is very happy. It's the pain of the parent, you know. He's at bliss. He's very happy. But I know he teaches me a lot every single day, the way to look at life and how do I go about. It's just that I feel very, very, I feel that if I surrender or if I something happens to me, it's more the fear of death. I think that's the worst kind of fear, because what will happen to him after I go, you know, and how is that going to spin out? I think it's more of a fear of death than not the present, you know.
It is a natural fear. It is so natural to feel that. You know, I know someone in Bombay. She is a Devi Bhakt. She has visitations from the goddess, you could say. She has two children. They are now men, of course. One of them is married, but both are not capable of looking after themselves. They have different issues. And we had an honest chat over a cup of chai. And she said something very beautiful. She said, you know, she said, Gautam ji, I am worried about my death and what they will do after I'm gone. But then I realized I can't do anything about it in any case. So what is the limit I could take this to is that when I die, they are so incapable of even having me cremated that I have already signed papers where I've donated my body for medical science. And so at least they will not have to go through that challenge of cremating me. Now, this is what she could think of as a mother. And she realized the limitations of what she could do, leave as much money as possible for them, and hope God will look after them. That's all. Priyanka, that's all we can do. We use our intellect, we use our buddhi. Where's the limit to this? What can I do? What can I control beyond that? Surrender, love, and trust.
Yes. Yeah. It's a
And just
difficult test. Yes.
it's
Yeah.
like a prayer to God, you know, that may I learn the lessons I am meant to in this incarnation rather than living a life without peace till the last breath.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank
Are you
you.
a single parent or?
No, I have tremendous support of my husband, so it's both of us together, but you can, it's a pain that we commonly share, you
Yes.
know, and but it's really God's grace that he gives me perspective to, on every step. And I know my child is getting better day by day, so it is improving, but because he doesn't have a sibling, kind of brings me to think that, oh, he's going to be on his own, you know. And I know he's very capable, but it's about, I feel that he's going to push me to the edge till I really, really become absolutely into that surrender mode. And, you know, I know the role he's come to show me, you know. So, yeah, that's what's
Look,
helping me.
surrender can happen even without being pushed to the edge. Let's be open to
Yeah,
it. Was,
I
thank you.
hope.
That was
Thank
very
you so
sweet
much.
sharing. And I think not only me, but all of us are so touched by your honesty, Priyanka.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Gautam
Thank
ji.
you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay, last question. Sumit. Yes, Sumit.
Namaste, Gautam ji.
Namaste.
I get a little confused with the non-doership and free will distinction, and I understand it's a paradox and probably beyond my comprehension. But even in the talk today, and you answered this numerous times actually in different ways. But there was to someone you'd said that, you know, you're a source through which, you're an instrument through which the source is acting. And then to somebody else, you mentioned, you know, what you can do is you can do your best. And but who's doing the best then? Isn't that also the source acting through you?
Yes. Identified consciousness, identified with a name and form as a separate entity. That one is being told to do your best, but knowing that that is an aspect of the source, a fragment of the source. A source consciousness fragments into multiplicity and comes and places itself in the right side of the chest. That is in all of us. So that operation in daily living takes place as the ego. So the ego is told you have to act as if you have free will, knowing that you don't. But you still have to act, you still have to take decisions. But when you realize that my decision is based on factors which were beyond my control, I lose my attachment to the decision and the outcome. Otherwise, I'm obsessed that my decision must be the right one. But your own life's experience has said all your decisions didn't turn out right. So, this obsession with making the right decision goes away because that is what disturbs one's peace. So, having the free will to make a decision, but knowing that free will is really not free will if we are honest with ourselves. In any case, the outcome of the decision is not in my control. So, what value is that free will? So, we stop glorifying free will like we used to earlier. That is basically what it implies.
Thank you.
You know, I still have to decide that if there are two restaurants I want to visit tonight, which of the two to go to. But I can only choose, and whether I have a good experience or not, I don't know. But choosing, I must choose. This is the realm of choosing.
And even that choice is not necessarily free will, it is conditioned
Exactly.
again,
It
right?
appears as free will, but to the person of understanding, the knowing is that it is just a mechanism of functioning in daily living.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very helpful.
Thank you. All right. That was wonderful. And we'll just sit in silence for a minute. If those who have cameras off, if they could switch them on, that would be great. And I really stopped wishing people a happy new year as such because we all know that whatever happens, we have adequate shares of pleasures and pains which are lined up for us in the coming year. And so that kind of wish changed to have a peaceful new year. And more importantly, try not to disturb others' peace. You see, that is why, to end on Goldsmith, he said, be a benediction of peace wherever you go. We are usually a benediction of a troubled mind wherever we go. We take our troubles with us to airports, restaurants, friends' homes, to work. And so we are nothing but a bag of trouble and discontent, a vibration of discontent, trying its best to spread discontent everywhere. And to reverse this, that is the gift of the spiritual journey. The opportunity to end the cause and effect loop being perpetuated in ignorance. What a tremendous gift. Thank you.